1.0. You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. And welcome, 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 dear listeners. Obviously, this being a Monday, yes, I sometimes don't lie when I say I actually enjoy Mondays, but it's actually good to see you guys today as well. Since we're only dealing with one particular sensory organ in terms of just hearing, obviously, you know, we have not literally seen each other, but good day nonetheless. And welcome to the Home Run here during your drive time session on Eagle FM. This is obviously where you'll be in our company for today, for this week. Technically, I'll be flying solo. My proverbial partner in crime, Helmut, has taken a short rest for this particular week, but nonetheless, he'll be back next week. We'll still be running this particular steamship all the way into the promised land of good discussions, insightful engagements, as well as also on a little bit of a stipend, allowing, you know, for yourself, you, our dear listeners, in terms of callers, contributions, and the likes to come through. Now, since I'm solo, guys, there is going to be a little bit of an allowance going to happen. You can call through at 083-288-401 during the course of today's particular discussion, as well as also contributing in terms of, shared particular insights or specific contributions that you'd like to make regarding the conversations during the course of this particular week. And as always, dear listeners, there's always also the opportunity for you to check up on our social media platforms to see, you know, what interesting discussions we always bring you there as well. Now, barreling directly into our discussion for this morning, and it seems I'm a little bit loud, but surely, you know, the loudness comes through from the particular discussion that we've got lined up for today is, yes, we've obviously seen the particular interesting developments of this past weekend where it has been the Ministry of Mines and Energy obviously making the rounds and obviously being in the spotlight for the, should I call it, the immediate removal of the Minister of Mines. No. How was I told on that WhatsApp group? Please, guys, it's the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy. Let me just get that right. Because in my particular eyes, you know, it just flows in the same particular direction of being just mines and energy. But it's industries, mines and energy. That's not for us. Okay, that's what the comms person at the ministry cited there for us. So, when we obviously look at this particular development, dear listeners, not the development of the minister's removal. No, not that development. Please, guys. The particular development in terms of what the said ministry has been championing alongside the Ministry of International Relations, alongside the agency known as NIPDB, alongside the, who else is there? Alongside the various other particular think tanks in the country, as well as also civil society organizations and other stakeholders that are geared or have taken up the particular mantle and mandate to talk about the perceived benefits, the perceived impacts, and the perceived or anticipated contributions that oil and gas will make. Yes, there is such a particular conversation. But you know what's the nice thing for today's particular session? There's actually a voice that will help also establish and actually explain some of the findings that came out. So at the heart of our conversation today, dear listeners, is actually the conversations and the insights of you. Yes, you, the everyday person, the person in the other parts of the region, the person found in the rural, in some cases in the rural areas of the 14 regions of Namibia, in terms of citing and stating the particular perspectives, the particular insights, as well as also your understanding around what oil and gas means to you. Yes, you. So the nice thing is actually that two researchers actually had gone and taken up this particular challenge, this particular challenge. They actually went out. They actually went and collated. They actually went and collected. They actually went and engaged from business operators to, you know, everyday people to non, how could you call it, to business entities that are not directly, within the oil and gas sphere of this country. And they actually engaged upon these things. Now, in many cases, dear listeners, what has usually happened, like in the realm of media, specifically like here in our realm of media, but obviously in our case as Eagle FM, you know, I have to state the obvious. We're a different breed, you know, we're a different breed. Is that we obviously also aim to get the perspectives and the contributions and discussions of people and insights of people that are not always, you know, the focal point of national development in this country. What has also been a pivotal development in the last 8 months since 21 March this year has been, because I'm citing the current administration, has been literally the, I don't want to say bombardment, but there has been a lot of field interactions, engagements, national interactions on various particular subject matter and discussions, and as thus also trying to provide feedback to all of us on the country, you know, across the country. Now, it obviously depends on what your everyday staple of information is. Do you just look at your screen from your smartphone, or do you just do the doom scrolling on social media, hoping for some sort of a new update to come about that can actually get you gripped and participating in the realm of online discourse? Or do you actively go and read things, broadly understand, get broad insights, and try to understand, okay, so this one media outlet says this, and this other media outlet states that, and this other one particularly just ignored this particular aspect completely, and we'll go from there. Now, you'll obviously pick up from that sentence that I just said there, and I'll actually also share it with you, is, for example, when you've got to look at the last 24 hours of development, there's a lot of speculation out there. There's a lot of people baking a lot of different kinds of confectionery goods regarding, you know, what is actually the state of the Ministry of Mines, Energy and Industries, or Industries, Mines and Energy. I don't know why they had to go for the acronym of miming. Can you guys believe it? Can you guys believe that? I know it's accidental that the acronym or the abbreviation of the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy literally says mime. I don't know if they are mimicking being in the mining and industry, mining industries and energy sectors, but literally that's what the new abbreviation says. It's just an observation, but we will forever not actually know what is the true state of things within that ministry. Actually, you can take that, you can take a pencil or a red pen, you know, like what we've been, like what we've all been, acclimatized to on school. You know, the trauma of seeing a red pen advertising a lot more on your exam script than your actual blue or black ink from your own particular infrastructure, you know, actually speaking to sound knowledge that you at that stage perceived to have been the most highest or called upon knowledge from your own particular, you know, brain capacity, just to be gravely disappointed by what the teacher graded you for. So, we obviously sit with a discussion that gives us an insight into what the everyday Namibian tries to understand. Now, dear listeners, when you sit with a discussion like that, when you sit with a question, a hypothesis of what does another Namibian think about the same subject matter? I know I've never thought that way in some cases. I know you have never thought in that way in some cases. And yes, I know that you know that I know that we all don't care what the other person thinks about a certain subject matter. There is a particularly important thing that actually speaks towards our subject matter on resource extraction, local material or local mineral beneficiation, which is a policy that a now defunct ministry that does not exist anymore, a part of it had now been shipped over to the same ministry that it had set up the same policy to do. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the actual policy, the actual minerals beneficiation policy that came out in 2021 in the throes of COVID and everything else in between. Two ministries, the old name of the Ministry of Mines and Energy, that being Ministry of Mines and Energy, and the now defunct Ministry of Industry and Trade, or Industrialization and Trade, had generated this policy together, which actually helps us understand how, you know, the cross-cutting sectoral discussion, because obviously anything to do with mining is trade within the Ministry of Trade, and trade is at the basis of everything that the Ministry of Mining is trying to achieve. So now you guys get the understanding of that. That particular policy in its own right, dear listeners, is a policy whereby the two ministries at the time in 2021 have been trying or were trying to put forward something whereby Namibians are at the forefront or literally are first in line to benefit from the minerals discovered, explored, from the minerals explored, discovered, extracted, being processed or semi-processed in, hopefully, in the context of Namibia, that Namibians are firstly benefiting, are firstly the first beneficiaries. I know I'm saying first a lot, but I'm emphasizing the first, the essence of the word first, and are literally the first in line to reap rewards. Now, I don't know if that has been an actual state of a situation somewhere. I know you don't know if there's actually been any particular proof providing said particular scenario. Hence the reason why I left you with another particular nugget of information that says we technically won't know. We technically won't know to what extent Namibians since 2021 have actually known about this policy, have actually been able to benefit under this policy's particular purview, and have actually participated in other particular things, you know, regarding the exploration and extraction of minerals. In best case scenario, setting the scene for us. Don't worry, guys. This is just our introduction. Best case scenario. The report that the Oversight Committee of Natural Resources brought out regarding the illegal lithium mining. I say perceived because the same Oversight Committee gave a rubber stamp of approval saying we don't find anything out of order. The same Oversight Committee. And then you will have, for example, the conversation I had with a journalist who also wrote about the same lithium exploration and mining exercise in Namibia, in the Orongo region, who cited, but it was illegal what they were doing. Do you guys see the particular variations in discourse in Namibia? You see, the surefire thing is, Namibia is not against investments, whether it be local or international or foreign. But Namibia is also not against sort of like labeling and ardently following its own particular legislations. Yes, I'll say that again. Because you see the same particular action cascading all the way downwards to the man and woman and child on the ground. So, when you get into the discussion of what has been mainstream noise in Namibia, green hydrogen, oil and gas, green hydrogen, oil and gas, and then sporadically developments pop up of someone, the king of Belgium flies in, and I'm like, wow, so that's how important green hydrogen is. And sporadically, you see a nuclear energy discussion pops up, and I'm like, okay, sure. And then sporadically, you see something else happen here in terms of potentially certain mines would be closed in Namibia. If you don't know what I'm talking about, obviously, there has been, for example, the announcements, not last year, the year before, specifically, of certain mines also closing down in Namibia. If you don't know, go read, guys. So you see these particular developments, and in every essence, it's the mining sector featuring. You'll also see in our e-villager platform that we also emphasize a lot on agriculture. But then, in its own right, the message is also a little bit skewed there. Here's the thing, dear listeners. 2 weeks back, actually last week, not 2 weeks back. No, 2 weeks back, yes. I stated, here on the home run, we also have to understand regarding the discussion of the land bill in Namibia. The land bill speaks of agricultural land, but the land bill does not address lack of affordable housing in urban land zoning or in urban land zones. Now I've got to ask you, dear listeners, what is the true need in Namibia? The true need, the actual need, is a place to stay. Now if you don't have a place to stay, what claim do you have to a place to farm? Let me say that again. If you don't have a place to stay, and no, for now, we will eliminate the identification of an informal shack or corrugated iron shack as an adequate place to stay, as an adequate dwelling for housing. What is the actual need versus what is the perceived need that our local politicians are putting in front of us? The perceived need is within the urban settlements, because Namibia is suffering from rural and urban migration. Pull and push and pull trends, as they have been called in development studies. A subject that much of us had on high school, that much of us did not take note of, but was actually a very pivotal, I think that is the most important subject matter in a developing country that any child should learn about, is the immediate needs around you, how you fit into those needs, how you will develop the similar needs when you become an adult, and how you need to understand what these needs actually speak to, the limitations they provide, the particular restrictions that they play within, as well as also the potential disqualifications that you might have to be shocked by the moment you become aware, i.e. woke. So, lined up for our discussion today, dear listeners, there's a short audio clip from a recent Institute for Public Policy Research engagement based upon Beyond the Hype. The discussion's name was Beyond the Hype, whereby two researchers, Martha Nangolo and Dietrich Remmert, collected, collated, as well as also evaluated and polished up responses across the country in terms of how the everyday Namibian understands how they will fit into the oil and gas sector. Now, the findings is all you will hear about. It's a good 12-minute segment, but you will just hear about the findings. What was discovered? What was discovered was, first and foremost, a disparity It's, yes, it is a disparity because I'm in an urban setting in Windhoek. I will obviously have more access to more information, have access to more hubs, have access to more resources in Windhoek than someone that's even in a different town. Even 90 kilometers south or 60 kilometers south of Windhoek, 60 kilometers north of Windhoek, I will have more access to information and more access to more knowledge regarding the latest particular happenings in the country. In the country. Not from Windhoek, in the country. Now, it was an insightful thing to know because it actually reflects you. Yes, you. You, wherever you find yourself in your car, if you're now currently still in the office listening to us, if you're now on your way going home, or if you find yourself in your daily commute, or if you find yourself at home already, lucky you, you would obviously be identifying and realizing, hey, I've never had the opportunity of, you know, voicing my, you know, my particular concerns or my particular just finding out more knowledge about what's happening here and what's going to happen there and what's going to happen there. But the nice thing is someone actually went and did this. Someone actually went and did this. So when you obviously have to look at this particular discussion, remember, at the back of your head, we're dealing with a developmental issue. At the back of your head, this is growing pains. We're still going through growing pains as a country. Yes, 35 years later. I mean, the conversation I had here with the Chinese ambassador Zhao Weiping, even in that context itself, regarding China's own particular development pathway, since 1945 up to 1979, is also a 30-year period. It's also a 30-year period. And even though a country like China achieves its own particular miracle of pulling 800 million people out of severe poverty. And remember, guys, I will stress this term, poverty, the difference between poverty and deprivation is that poverty is a political term. And poverty is used at the UN level, is used at the other UN agency levels, is used at the World Economic Forum level, is used at the EU level, is used at the AU SADC, even in the SACU levels, the word poverty is constantly thrown in there. But if you define poverty, poverty speaks of deprivation. It just speaks of deprivation. That's all. You're deprived of something. Because in many cases, it costs you money. So you're deprived of the money to be able to access something. So it's a double deprivation. Or you can actually also say it's a compounded deprivation for all the bankers that I've also discovered that listen to us. Yes, us, the home run. So when you look at deprivation in its own right, deprivation also happens at various levels. This could be deprivation of services. This could be deprivation to a needed particular resource. Deprivation is also an aspect of access to opportunities. It's deprivation. It's pure, simple deprivation. Now, the insightful thing is, like I highlighted, the perspectives that come through gives us a lot to think about. A lot to think about in the context that you've got people that sometimes don't know, and sometimes they know. Sometimes did not have the opportunity to engage about this conversation or this particular project or this particular topic. But then also, you know, they immediately also would tell the researchers, don't use my words verbatim as they are. I don't want to come off as being anti something or anti government or anti this or anti that. And that is also some of the particular fears that exist in the rural and smaller town areas of Namibia. I don't know, guys, what kind of politicians do we actually have in the smaller towns in the rural areas? Are these guys some sort of thugs? Do they walk around with billy clubs and literally go and not threaten, but, you know, What's the word that they use, that other English word? Coerce? Do they go and coerce people? If you don't do this, you might not see this particular benefits. Does this really happen, guys? Remember, you're talking, this is Dwight. I have listened too much to realize, you know, in many cases, when it comes to election season, which it now definitely is, there's going to be a lot of noise. And a lot of the noise is a lot of sales pitches being thrown around. A lot of sales pitches being thrown around. And you can even see in many cases, many of the sales pitches are all based upon protection of electorate zones. Meaning, there where said political party has achieved a win in the last elections, it's now defenses. Put up your defense, defend your position as best as possible, and we wait for the storm to calm down after later in November. After the election period, obviously, in November. I know. There's a lot of information going around. But, not to waste any time, dear listeners. We have a listen specifically to Mr. Dietrich Remmert, who was one of the researchers that actually did this particular field exercise. In terms of getting an understanding of what the everyday Namibian was talking about. What the everyday Namibian thinks about regarding the oil and remember, the hypothesis was, what are your thoughts on the oil and gas sector? What do you believe? What is your level of participation in the sector? What do you think you'll be able to get out of the sector? And mind you, dear listeners, the sector will only pump oil or produce oil after 2030. Let me say that again. After 2030. Let that sink in. After 2030. In best case scenario, the reason why I say after 2030 is because the industrial baseline study or survey report states it clearly. It's potentially after 2034 or 2035. After 2030. Let it sink in. You can't deviate. You can't ask a question of when does the oil show up, because there's a study that literally says after 2030. Without much further ado, guys, we get into that particular engagement and we come back after that. Well, okay, we'll have a ad break or even after that audio, but we come back after that. And then the phone lines will be open during the course of the discussion, obviously, whereby you can call through at 083-288-401. Engage. Let's have a listen to what you feel, to what you think, to what you understand the subject matter, as well as also the contributions cited. We'll be back right after this. You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. We come back to listeners and we get into that particular contribution regarding the findings of what Namibians felt, think, and how they see their participation in the local oil and gas developments of the country.
We looked at sort of, Martha already alluded to this, we sort of tried to capture really some key themes around sort of hopes, concerns, challenges, observations, and we have a whole bunch of things. Interestingly, just as a tiny quick background, so some of these discussions were actually really, really interesting. People had really nuanced, you know, opinions on this issue, and were quite aware of the sort of community sensitivities in their specific area, especially the environmental organizations, but we feel most of them. So it's not like people are just, we're absolutely against it, or we're absolutely for it, or, you know, local content is absolutely critical for this, for the oil and gas stuff. So there's a large amount of ambiguity and people not saying, well, yes, but. So just keep that in mind. But some of the key things we definitely can state is that many stakeholders had a clear hopes of economic benefits from oil and gas. This was quite a significant component in our analysis. We'll get to that just now. Another thing is, though, that a lot of them also mentioned, as Grant sort of alluded to, there were a lot of concerns around various governance issues. So mismanagement of resources, readiness of local authorities to manage the potential influx of people looking for work in this sector, pressure on infrastructure, huge concern. So these are the kind of issues that really get, you know, if we get to the nuts and bolts, what communities, what some of these civil society leaders see, what's happening, really sort of concerns them, if you will. So stakeholders also voiced concern that oil and gas will negative impact other sectors of the communities. So we already have some economists, some financial analysts saying, you know, this is all good and well, and we might get lots of money out of this, lots of tax revenue, which we can sort of provide also services. However, we are concerned that it will stunt other sectors of the economy. For example, tourism was mentioned. There was concern that, you know, local communities can't find electricians anymore to do a proper job in Walvis Bay or Swakopmund, for example, because oil and gas would be like, they case so well, it's going to be hard for somebody to find somebody, you know, to do something small, or other businesses to just find a competent electrician. So very sort of practical kind of concerns mentioned by these some of our interviewers. And then obviously a competition over scarce resources, what I just mentioned, you know, competition for skilled labor, which will leave other sectors hanging. Final issue, which I think we are personally quite worried about, overall there were very few stakeholders who raised a lot of concerns around environmental themes. You had some of them, particularly CSOs, and also interestingly, this was raised a lot by academia and independent researchers, but perhaps because they just have a really good insight in what are the sort of dangers in terms of, you know, environmental aspects. We also spoke to a marine biologist who was very worried, but quite frankly, not just about oil. She was worried about general putting too much pressure on marine resources. So green hydrogen, you know, all sorts of other salmon farming, you name it, they're worried. But in terms of the other components, far less stakeholders expressed a specific concern about that, which obviously indicates to us we might have to do quite a bit of work, because if government claims, or if lots of other stakeholders claim, Namibia is so concerned about the environment and it's a cornerstone of our legislation, you know, we do all these EIAs, blah, 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 but then hardly anybody seems to be very worried about this. So just putting it out there, it's one thing we found. This is tiny, okay? You don't have to read it, even if you can. This is just sort of to give you an idea how we sort of map the kind of information. So right at the top, you have a section that looks at positive economic impact. Then you have a section that looks at negative issues. Then you have a section on environment. And that's both concerns as well as just general observations. And then you have a large section which looks at governance issues and themes. So it's not always negative, it's also sometimes just a general observation. And if you see this sort of box, this is an environmental section. And you see there's a big gap. So the blue indicates that quite a lot of stakeholders commented on this or did indicate info on that. So obviously raising the kind of importance percentage-wise by this issue. Some of them are, you know, hardly anywhere mentioned. But as you see, environment, there's a huge gap. This side is the academia, and you can see everybody's talking about it. Few civil societies, organizations talking about it. Business, daily, local government, other government agencies. Very, very few as well. So this is one of the big points. Otherwise, some other interesting signs. But also very interesting because you see a lot of comments, so this is really, people had a lot of lot to say, and it's just not, it's not a black and white issue, you know, it's very complex, which I think great because Namibians are really engaging with the topic and thinking about it, and I feel sometimes this is the kind of community input is missing from our, you know, business discussion and, you know, financial decision or how much money we're going to get out of it, etc. So this is interesting to note. Right, I've been waffling on a little bit too long, so I'm going to give you some more findings based on this table we just set. We have sort of the general four comments I gave quickly, and these are some of more the specific. So one of the big issues which over 50% of the stakeholder mentioned was lack or poorly structured public or stakeholder consultations. This was really interesting because across the board, especially civil society, but also other stakeholders said there is a lack, or even if they are, they are not well structured. And I've also sat in one of these EIA sessions, and it was all right, but it was very technical. So if you, you know, come from the community and you perhaps come from a disadvantaged background, your education isn't that great, you know, you will struggle to make sense of this, what they actually say. They do explain, but do you always have the, you know, the push them to actually ask for clarification? So this is a big thing that we found, and people definitely said, you know, there needs to be, stakeholders said, you know, this is something that needs to be addressed. The others, which we really speak about, there's a lot of hope for employment and business from oil and gas. A lot of people hope for this. There's some entrepreneurs, there are some, you know, mining companies, other service providers that provide all sorts of business for extractive industries, very keen, general community, civil society themselves, some of them said, you know what, environmental, we're concerned about this, however, we see the need for jobs in our community, we see the need for financing, you know, public services, be it healthcare, be it roads, be it new water infrastructure. Right. Coming to pressure on existing public infrastructure, service and resources. Again, very important point. Lots of people said this. I think almost 40% of stakeholders mentioned this issue. Yeah. So quite significant. This section only really has findings in that have a third or more people who mentioned this. So anything else we sort of ignored. But local authorities especially, I can just say that Swakopmund was very, very worried, and there were some other concerns from other government agencies, but also communities saying, you know, water is a big issue in coastal communities. You know, people in Kabango and the Kabango regions were worried about, you know, healthcare issues. So these are all concerns that they had, saying, well, if we now suddenly have all these people coming looking for jobs, how are we going to manage that, you know? Is central government is going to help us out with building new infrastructure? So this is quite a big concern. Increased environmental risk. This was one of the things in the environment that actually came up quite often. A lot of them didn't. But an increased environmental risk, and very, very many people mentioned oil pollution, which is understandable. Then opportunities for skills building and industrialization. So the hope that is also often said by a lot of, you know, government officials, officials in the industry. You know, there's some questions around that, but we just put it there. People really hope that this will generate additional opportunities, not just, you know, coming from oil and gas, but maybe, I don't know, petrochemical industry being established in Namibia, or, you know, you're already seeing it, specific courses targeted at this industry that can meet some needs that locals then can fill. So, also a number of people talked about local content, but too few to make it in here, but this is sort of related. Okay, the last 4 points quickly. Overall economic boost for local communities and raised living standards. So, and this is really, we're talking about the local communities we interviewed, so people in Rundu, people in the coastal community saying, we really hope we will see, you know, genuine improvement in living standards. Understandable. Then another complaint, lack of detailed information on the industry, plants, and public data. So again, things are happening, we do see consultations, but a lot of people still feel there's a lack of information, and perhaps also a lack of information that sort of is tailored to, you know, specific community groups and their kind of level of knowledge and where they're coming from. So this was quite a big thing. And then something that our director is obviously often very onto is the risk of corruption and mismanagement. A lot of people mentioned this across the board, so it wasn't just environmental organizations. And this is quite concerning, but I think people have heard in many communities, and this is speculative from my part, but many people have been promised so many developments in the past, not just from government, also from businesses, and these often haven't materialized. So my sense is that there's quite a bit of cynicism in this, people, and even some people saying, well, even if the oil comes, that money isn't going to end up in, you know, isn't going to come to local communities. We are not going to get the jobs. It's going to be taken by some tenderpreneur, or it's going to disappear somewhere in government coffers. So, quite a number of stakeholders were very vocal about this. And then sort of a final point, which is sort of, if you are positive, because they see the need and they say this is something that needs to be done. So there's a need to invest in and improve awareness, knowledge, and public education. And this sort of speaks to some of the earlier info we have. And this was more like a suggestion saying this is something that the communities and stakeholders really see as necessary. This was more like a suggestion.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
So let's speak to some of the earlier info we have, and this was more like a suggestion saying this is something that the communities and stakeholders really see as necessary.
So, dear listeners, coming back there from the particular take provided by Mr. Dietrich Remmert, who obviously, as you heard, just explored some of the findings that they discovered in terms of local community engagements on the ground, based upon what people feel and could see their level of participation in the realm of specifically oil and gas. Now, let's be honest. As Namibia, as a country, we don't know oil and gas. I'll say it again. As a country, we don't know oil and gas. We literally don't. The reason why we don't know oil and gas is primarily because it has never been on our radar. We probably have not even seen nor know the scale of the various sectors that oil and gas can generate. We are told we have to go do our own research, like I have had to go and do myself, in terms of understanding the extent to which oil products, to the extent to which oil can generate various sectors. For example, oil is pivotal in the production of your photovoltaic products, your solar panels. Your solar panels are literally made from oil. That's oil. Plastics. Most plastics. All the plastics I can see in the studio here in front of me. That's oil. And then obviously you get all the other particular, you know, petrol-based chemicals that are generated from this fossil fuel. Gas in its own right, some of the particular immediate advantages are electricity generation. And for some reason, the same ministry, obviously, that has been in the headlines for the past 24 hours since yesterday, has in its own right made promises of gas to power generation. And for a good 3 years since 2023, up until this year, I'm still waiting for that gas to power project. I'm still waiting for that gas to power project. Oh no, guys, don't worry. I'm not holding my breath. I just want to be proven wrong. That's all. There's nothing wrong with accepting a loss on a particular development or on a particular, you know, particular outcome. But it's not me that made the promise of gas to power, gas to electricity generation. It's not me. It's the same ministry that's been in the headlines for the past 24 hours. It's been on everyone's mind and everyone's on the tip of everyone's tongue. It's the same ministry that has been promising since 2023. When the first oil and gas conference popped up, it's the same ministry. They went and made promises. Namibia should look forward to the next 6 months. There's something exciting happening in gas to power production. Then silence. And then the new year comes in, another oil and gas conference. Namibia has to look forward to this development. It's going to get us here. And then silence. And then we roll into another year, 2025, after elections and after new administration steps in. And I still need to see whether that gas to electricity project pops up. I still need to see it. You see, guys, if you just look at the gas to electricity project, which is based upon the Kudu gas field itself, and like Helmut and I have pointed out here on the home run, the Kudu gas field is something that has been in existence since the 70s. Since the 70s. So since the 70s, we've been sitting with institutional knowledge about natural resources in this country, like the Kudu gas field. And at every turn and at every page, somehow, we are just not leveraging a specific resource to a particular benefit. The obvious other thing is also what Mr. Remmert himself cited, is that Namibia has got its nationally determined contributions, our NDCs that we had to submit at the UNFCCC? Yeah, at the UNFCCC. So the United Nations Forum for Climate Change Convention. This is the UNFCCC is, remember, is the same particular platform that is in charge of the UN Conference of Parties, the Climate Change Conference of Parties. And with COP30, at the end of November, it always happens at the same time, same place, same date, same zone. At the end of November, I am interested in terms of knowing whether or not our president will attend. Now, Namibia seems to be a champion of its environmental laws. We still need to update our oil and gas legislation, which would also include green hydrogen, but it's not going to be same legislation. I'm just going to burst your bubble there already, because if you understand what green hydrogen technically stems from, it is not the same as oil and gas. It is not being mined. It is not being mined. It is manufactured. It is a manufacturing process. So it'll require its specific legislation in a manufacturing perspective, not in an extraction perspective. Even though hydrogen production or green hydrogen production is literally molecule splitting. It's literally molecule splitting. It's not mining. It's not extraction. You're not digging a hole. You're not damaging the natural environment to achieve a goal, to achieve or get to the resource, you are splitting water molecules. You're splitting the two hydrogen molecules from the oxygen molecule. And then the only byproduct is a positive oxygen into the atmosphere. And that's it. You're not even burning a fossil fuel like coal or diesel to literally split the water molecule. That obviously is known as black hydrogen or gray hydrogen. It's known as black and gray. I think black has to do with the oil or the diesel. And gray is charcoal. Not charcoal, but, you know, coal burning or coal-fired production of hydrogen. So, but still, you're sitting with a manufacturing process. You're still sitting with a manufacturing process because you're adding value. You're doing a process. You needed equipment to achieve a specific process. So put green hydrogen production to one side. Just put it to one side. That's manufacturing. Oil and gas is purely extraction. And by the rate things have been going is that one specific point being noted is that it has been observed specifically like in the coastal towns that Namibians are already complaining about shortages. And this is shortages in skills, shortages of access to fellow Namibians who were an electrician here in his community. And he's been doing the odd jobs in terms of helping his community to, with their electrical needs. Or he obviously needs to, you know, make some money and be able to survive from this particular skill set that he's been trained on. Oil and gas seems to be absorbing these specific artisans, these specific skilled Namibians, these specific targeted Namibians, and they get taken out of the community. Because obviously they realize these skilled Namibians, hey, I'm making a lot more money, it's a steady paycheck, my life can become predictable, and I can also see prosperity at the end of the light, at the end of the tunnel. Now, when that happens, you have to think about, guys, the rate of replacement. It's the same theory that you can apply, that you apply to population dynamics, specifically with birth and death rates of a population's growth and decline. It's the same theory, the same thinking you can apply in the realm of skills and qualified peoples who need to replace that role that a previous incumbent had occupied. How do you replace that person? Is there someone else who is also the same skill set in your community? Yes or no? If it's a yes, okay, we can continue with life. He probably just has a different price list or price range for his skills. And if it's a no, oh my goodness, what do you now do? And now you start calling up for references. Who can refer me to what other electrician or mechanic? Because our local electrician or mechanic has gotten a fixed job at one of the oil rigs. And I'm so glad such particular research was done. I'm so glad it had been done because it actually puts a spotlight on the actual things happening in our communities regarding oil and gas. The actual things happening in our communities. Now, what you obviously did not hear was my questions and answer session, or during the questions and answer session, because that was a literal 10 minutes away from where the audio just ended. Now, I asked a question to the two researchers in terms of, have they bumped into narratives in this field research they've done regarding people being told that the oil jobs would come like in the next 2 to 3 years? Have you encountered such narratives in the country? They have cited yes in one specific part of the country. They also cited specifically that the local authorities are also doing their part in certain parts, specifically at the coast, Walvis and Swakop, and Ludrits in terms of firstly being grounded with the knowledge, meaning they can anticipate when these developments would materialize. Secondly, how some of them anticipated in terms of what kind of population dynamics as well as also specific needed developments they need to invest in order to achieve XYZ level of, let's say, being just prepared, of preparation, level of preparation. Let's put it like that. The level of preparation obviously speaks towards accommodation, speaks obviously towards the kinds of facilities or the kinds of planned economic activities to be positioned in each of the particular localities that I just mentioned. One of obvious concern is the two Kavango regions. I said one of obvious reserve concern is the two Kavango regions because, as you guys have known, it's oil exploration we have not been talking about for the past two and a half years, but it still is there. The activities of Recon Africa, they are still there in northeastern Namibia. Now, I understand that it seems that there is a word of mouth discussion going around there. Specifically in the northeast of Namibia, that specifically oil jobs are going to happen and materialize like today. The industrial baseline study or survey clearly stipulates it that Namibia has a lot more work to do to reach production level. And in between, a lot of assessment is taking place of the quality of oil of our southernmost coast of Namibia, where much of the attention is based on.
Sometimes you have to raise a Windhoek beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Windhoek beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Windhoek, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Coming back from the ad break, dear listeners, and obviously you're here on the home run with myself, Dwight. Yes, I'm flying solo for this week. Like I said, my partner in crime just, you know, needed to recharge his batteries a little bit. I hope he's recharging his batteries a little bit. So, getting back to where we left off, guys. There's obviously one concern out of the three particular targeted areas that will play a pivotal role in the oil and gas sector in the coming years of Namibia. And that's obviously the Karas region, the Erongo region, and the Tukavango regions. Now, the Tukavango regions specifically is based, and what I could read into what was observed was literally there is information deprivation taking place there. So when I say information deprivation is who are the people talking about oil and gas in the two regions and specifically how is this information carried over? Is it an actual public stakeholder engagement, inviting people, concerned individuals, concerned community members to come and view and participate and ask questions and be informed of what is happening in their localities? Or is it a discussion specifically that is potentially a local traditional leader going around saying, you know what, guys, we've been promised, you know, participation in this, we will have jobs here, and this is the level of prosperity to take place. Now, I have observed a similar thing with the green hydrogen programs. This is no fault at the proponents of green hydrogen. This is no fault of theirs. So far, the information sessions I've attended, the various interactions I have had, none of it was a scenario of potentially immediately today. But there is also a narrative walking around regarding that sector as well. But before we continue, guys, let's take an ad. Let's take a caller. Eagle FM, sorry for the missed call. If, you know, for the caller that tried to call through, you can still call through at 083-288-401. Let's have a listen to what you guys want to share. want to contribute to the discussion today, and technically what your, just what your takeaway is, because it's always interesting having a listen to what you guys cite. Now, there's nothing wrong with people obviously having discussions and discourse between them on the community level, on the street level, in the neighborhood level, on the household level, because that's what we are. We're humans. That's what we do. We talk. We communicate. We interact. We try to find out information and we have a discussion. Sometimes it boils, it's, you know, flows into an argument, you know, obviously, you know, because people have opinions and people are, you know, they feel that their opinion is important. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what makes us human. The obvious thing is just, it's what is in your opinion. Is there actual knowledge in it? Is there an actual perspective that no one knew about? Or is it potentially just hot air that was wasted? Potentially. So when we sit with these particular engagements and these particular narratives taking place, now remember I told you that it seems that there is a similar narrative, and I've discovered this in the south of Namibia. Now there's a similar narrative regarding green hydrogen in the south of Namibia. Irrespective of whether or not this person has the adequate skills and training and knowledge, it seems like someone told them they would have jobs in green hydrogen. Someone told them. And the actual reality is on the ground is that the person who says this, who believes this, did not pass grade 12. Let me say that again. Who says this, believes this, did not pass grade 12. Now, do take note. The hyphen guys started their skills mapping, which is similar to a skills census. They only started that the other day. So it's still early days. But I heard about that skills mapping exercise the very first time at a Ministry of Labor engagement back in 2024. Yeah, back in last year. It was around the psychometric testing unveiling that Ministry of Labor did last year. So for a whole year, the hyphen guys had been, actually for more than that potentially, because they were trying, the person that spoke at that event said, they're trying to find a way of bringing forward this particular kind of a mechanism that can try and literally assess what's the skill level in Namibia. But the Labor Force Survey of Namibia actually did that. But I know this is more targeted, this is more focused, this is more niche. This is trying to reach specific level in terms of how you as a Namibian can participate in one of Namibia's green hydrogen sectors or green hydrogen phases of the country. What's your level of involvement there? And remember, it's not a mining sector. It's a manufacturing sector. It's not digging a hole and getting the thing out of the hole and washing it off with water and putting it in the sorted bunch to the right, and the unsorted bunch is to the left. No, guys. This is, can you actually understand the technology? But before we continue, let's take a call. Eagle FM, good afternoon.
Yes, bye.
How are you doing, Mandume?
I'm alright, man. How are you?
I'm alright.
So you guys are not going to put us in lambdam again because Helmut is not around.
Listen, don't speak that thing so loudly. But yeah. There is no Ramadan. There technically has been no Ramadan or self-enforcement, you know, in that scenario. But yeah, how have you been, Mandume?
We are fine, man. And you?
Yeah, I'm all good. What do you want to share for today?
Yeah, I just want to talk about, like, when it comes to oil and gas.
Mm.
Yeah, just to add a bit. You see, the thing is that, these guys were, I was even listening to the audio, that he's saying, Kamano, when you are having people who are not well educated and what, they cannot understand the project and so on.
Mm.
But the thing is that, when you're having a project proposed, by the, I mean, and then now the information is very sketchy.
Yeah.
That's the problem. How can we be aware that there's something around if there's no enough information?
Yeah.
And then remember one thing, that the people who have been spreading the words, the project, and some are resigning.
Are you saying resigning? Are you using a soft term?
Soft term, I'm telling you.
Oh yeah, you're right, yeah. One person resigned and stepped away.
Yeah.
Another one was
one
removed yesterday.
Yeah.
I know, it's 2025 is not everyone's year, I know.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And the problem I see with them when they come up with those projects, especially when they are doing public, what percentage, I mean public, what do you call them?
Stakeholder engagement.
Engagement. Yeah. That is the public engagement, yeah.
Yeah.
What they do, the problem always when they come there, they already prepare themselves that they are just here to have a presentation. Instead of us to have one-on-one engagement and question and answer. They only come and preach like a pastor. Then what you, as a public have to index is just to say maybe amen.
No, you are right. Do you know why? Because literally the researcher highlighted that he attended one of those oil and gas engagements, and it was like highly technical language that was used. Even to share there, I went to the, it's earlier in the year. I went to it was in May. Yeah. In the month of May. Yeah. When Earth Day happened, I went to the Venus Total Energy's public engagement that was held here in the FNCC in Windhoek. And
yeah.
Because I drove from here from the studio, I even told what's his name, Helmut, you know, I want to go see what's going to be said there. I get there, and then in the crowd was IPC's leader, Itula, and there was another political leader there as well. There was a lot of interested people that showed up there. It was actually surprising. And so the environmental consultant spoke first and presented their findings in terms of, you know, citing the impact on sea animals and sea life. And then they obviously looked at the particular challenges in terms of how challenging is it actually to drill for the oil down there. Now, here's the thing. You and I, Mandume, understand distance in a flat line. You know, if you drive from here to Okahania, you understand on a flat line, that is, or in a straight line on the surface of the earth, that is 60 kilometers. But if you say 60 kilometers below water, we have no understanding. We have no understanding of how 60 kilometers looks down water because we don't know how deep 60 kilometers below water is.
Yeah.
Now the weirdest thing is, the oil is, they first have to drill 3 kilometers below the surface of the sea, and they have to drill for another 3 kilometers under the bedrock.
You see now.
Now you and I, we don't understand what 3 kilometers looks like.
I'm telling you, just imagine like 60 kilometers or 30 kilometers.
No, it's deep. And it's deep, but we don't have that. We've never been that deep in such waters.
Deep in, I'm telling you, not even in like, not even maybe 500. But it's still a lot.
No, it is. Yeah.
But that is deep. No, we've never been there.
And the deepest that a human can swim without oxygen, the deepest we can swim.
Yeah.
The guy held, I think he has a record for more than 100 meters. And then he had to swim back up. Because by that time, your body starts poisoning itself because of the carbon dioxide, and you start suffocating from inside. Or your lungs burst because of the pressure.
Because of dirt,
You
can't hold it for long.
Yeah. So we have no idea what 3,000 meters or 3 kilometers look like to drill first. That's now in a straight line down. And we don't know what 3 kilometers below that drilling point even looks like, meaning the pumping area.
That is the problem I'm having with our people. Because sometimes even where you are doing this, you are doing in the north.
Yeah.
You know, the most people are speaking in Nalakti language.
Oh, yes, language.
But you are
right.
Using English.
Exactly.
You are using English.
or everyone shows up speaking English, but the people you want to sit there in the crowd don't speak English, or they're not good in English, and they just understand hello, goodbye, and thank you.
Yeah.
And that's
thank you, and the employment.
And
they
employment.
Employment, and then they will clap in.
Yeah, and they understand
the
money. Yeah.
And the money involving.
Yeah, and that's it.
They're talking about millions and billions.
And then people are asking, so what does this mean for me? And then it's just an explainer of saying, yes, it allows your country to have more oil, or you will have, okay, so, but why can't I just buy the oil from Angola? No, you can't, no, don't talk about Angola. Yeah, those guys show up here with 5 liters only, and it's not purely purified, but yeah, but that's the picture. That's the picture, Mandume.
Yeah.
You are right. That is literally the picture on the ground.
Ah, serious, do I? Anyway, let me give you an opportunity for maybe some other people are coming through.
Not a problem. Thanks for coming through, man.
All right, man.
Mm. So there you have it, dear listeners. Obviously, when you've got to look at the picture at the ground, I am so, firstly, I'm slightly privileged, obviously, to be able as media to be invited to various particular public engagements that not many of you have the time or the luxury to attend. And the unique perspective that comes through from these particular engagements, guys, is that it allows us to understand what is going on in the country. Besides me obviously telling you many times, go and read, guys, go and read, go and read, go and read, go and read some more, learn to read, get access to the information. You know, just expand your knowledge, because there's a lot of things happening in the country. But before we continue, ad break.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Before we continue, dear listeners, we take a few live reads and come back right after that. Bielwitsche University, where the 2026 applications are now open for the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education. Programs on offer are the Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 4 to 7, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 8 to 12. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 0612254463 or 0612254462. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to $1 million Namibian in prizes. Every week, one lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stoney, or Twist in 2 liters, 1.25 liters, or 600 ml bottles. Look under the yellow cap, dial *142 *45845 # punch in your code, follow the prompts to enter, and just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win with Coca-Cola. T's and C's apply. Go to our social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. So, dear listeners, getting into the last 13 minutes of today's particular program. It's straightforward stuff, I know, but sometimes not so straightforward in its particular spirit. What I say, what I mean by that particular discussion is obviously when you've got to look at the narratives that people have developed, and when I say narrative, I'm actually speaking towards the understanding. Now, you so obviously first listen to a message, how it has been presented to you. You obviously see if you first understand the language. If you do understand it, yay. If you don't understand it, obviously you are not so lucky. But when obviously the said delivery takes place and the said level of absorption has occurred, you then obviously sit there deciphering the message and its particular value and its particular insights and its particular understanding and what it's trying to espouse to you. And then you generate a conclusion based upon what you've been served. You turn around and you walk to your closest friend or your closest family member and you go tell them, hey, you know what? We're going to have jobs in oil and gas. Yay! Would you look at that? Unfortunately, it's not as clear cut, because we still have to understand can we literally provide the skill sets for that particular sector? Can we? Can we? It is a yes, but to what level? You know why, guys? I bumped into two former buddies. I'll call them buddies because, you know, if you use the word friend, it's a pretty heavy, you know, term to use to call someone my friend. But I bumped into two buddies at the start of this year. Both of them are Angolan. They have studied in Namibia before. And both of them actually work in the oil and gas sector. Now, the one, his wife is Namibian primarily, but he sees great opportunity in terms of the recent developments in Namibia's oil and gas sector because he's participating there at the coast in terms of the training for oil rig teams and oil rig professionals. So there's a whole bunch of Namibians that are obviously being trained there at Walvis, you know, in terms of oil rig skills up, skills development and all that. And he cited to me that it's his own particular company because in the oil and gas sector in Angola, there's been such large local content policy development. Local content policy development, guys, is local business involvement development in the Angolan sphere. And it has literally allowed them to be able to consult across the world in the various oil producing countries. The other guy, I bumped into him in Grove Mall here in Kleine Cooper. He and his family there, and I was surprised to see him back because I thought actually, you know, he would never come back. And then he told me, no, Dwight, I'm in the oil and gas sector specifically, and he consults for oil rig companies specifically in terms of training oil rig teams. And he's just here in Namibia on holiday at that time. And the discussion obviously was based upon, the opportunities that they see in their southern neighbors' involvement in the oil and gas sector. Now, here's the thing, guys. There should be no secrets about Namibia's particular potential that we can unlock and that we can leverage from neighbors like Angola. And I know in previous sessions here on Eagle FM, I have said, well, I frown at leveraging on, you know, Angola's particular experience, but I would not say no. Me personally, I would not say no. Because I'm actually seeing the value, meaning my horizons have been expanded. My understanding has been broadened based upon what's the level of participation. What can Namibians go and learn? What can Namibians try and do? Why? Because Namibia has been fixated on just the mining sector, that we've not had any other expansion to the extraction sector of Namibia in terms of, is there anything else Namibians can participate in? Can we try and broaden this horizon? And mind you, it's not even the discussion on Namibia's ability to diversify from its dependence, because Namibia is literally in a Dutch curse already. We are dependent economically on just the mining sector. On just the mining sector. So obviously when oil and gas starts doing its thing, starts doing its particular party dance, yeah, we will see obviously that exponential contribution. But the question still exists, which is an answer that I obviously aptly got back in 2022. That's after President Geingob alongside ministers Shimi Minister Shimi and Alwendo came back from the World Economic Forum alongside the former National Planning Director General, Kanjode. When they came back from Davos, if you guys remember, 2022, Namibia was invited to Davos. They came back and just at that time, the Ukraine war had broken open. And at that time, the oil and gas discussion was now heating up. And at that time, at State House, I asked the question to Minister Alwendo, former Minister Alwendo, what does it look like for us Namibians, for Namibia, who just the previous year in 2021 minister, the former minister of environment, Shifeta, had to go and submit Namibia's nationally determined contributions. And now Namibia is announcing oil fines. What does it look like to Namibia? And minister, former minister Alwindo at that time said, Namibia is within its rights to try and maintain its NDCs, but also to explore its natural resources and to find the best position for Namibians by leveraging these resources for Namibian benefit. And I agree. 3 years later, 4 years, technically 4 years later, I wholeheartedly agree with that standpoint, with that point. There is nothing wrong with us as Namibia generating our own benefit from our own resources for our particular prosperity. The obvious question that stems from this is, how do we do this? Who can help us? Do we do this alone, or do we go it ourselves? There's also a big particular development that obviously stems from this. South Africa recently signed a 12 billion euro just energy transition package with the EU back in last month or at the start of this month. It makes things tricky because if Namibia's biggest trading partner, South Africa, goes and does things like that, it makes it tricky for us because it does not mean, or in a way does signal to us, our oil and gas would even become potentially not such hot property in a SADC region, in a SADC discussion. Well, we can obviously look to our northern neighbor, Angola. Its oil and gas, its oil and gas didn't play a particular role to the benefit of the rest of the SADC region, which obviously shows the particular intra-African trade is a problematic scenario. Even in an intra-SADC trade, this dimension, it's a problematic scenario. It is problematic. There are growing pains there. It is. It's either there is limited or restrictive financing available, and it's based upon priority to priority and to financial year to financial year perspectives, but it actually means it takes us a lot longer, a lot more time to install and actually get things going. Let me say install and to actually get things going. And that's beside the obvious developments that obviously kicked off, late yesterday, building into this Monday, starting off our week with a lovely six being smashed over the boundary for the maximum in terms of how hot that particular talking point had been. Because believe you me, guys, I was willing today to ask, why? What happened? But I think somehow, you know, the press office of State House realized there might be a few problematic journalists. Not problematic in the sense of being an actual problem, but in terms of potentially asking a question in front of the whole staff of the Ministry of Mines and Energy in terms of why was their boss removed? Guys, I was ready to do that. I was ready to do that, guys. But you know what? We have to comply. Because we were asked, you know, please, as media, exit. And only take certain kinds of footage and content. You can't ask questions. You can't stay. So, it's not to say that that particular talking point is case closed. I mean, it's just, you obviously have to see what's the next development going to be. Where are we going to move from here? In the coming month, that is obviously November, we're going to have the, what do we call it? The sort of like the Greek salad version of elections. which is local and regional elections taking place. When I say Greek salad version of elections, because when it comes to presidential, you know, you hear of national policies. I don't know what the local politicians in various constituencies across the country are saying. Why? Because they depend on Windhoek politicians to come and talk to them, to come talk to their constituencies wherever they are. First and foremost, that greatly sort of like disappoints me, because that means, you are using collaborations to speak about your constituency needs. What is your constituency needs? How do your constituency needs factor into the national development agenda of this country? What are the national needs, and how does your constituency fit into those needs? It shouldn't be rocket science, and it definitely should not be a train smash of a thought process. It should not be. But much of you, Eagle FM listeners, obviously you guys would have been in participating in a whole bunch of things that have been kicking off in the past October, because this is only the last week of October, and technically it's sort of like it will heat up. It will heat up. But we've got to see. We'll have to observe. And we'll have to see what particular developments pop up, spring loose, or even happen in this week alone, for that matter. Now, before we end off, dear listeners, we're quickly going to take a short break. We're going to come back after that ad break, and we'll say our goodbyes. And we'll see each other again.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Coming back there from the ad break, dear listeners, and as we've just hit the top of the hour at 6 p.m., obviously, just leaving you with a little bit of some lasting knowledge or last bits of knowledge. The discourse will not die about the impact of oil and gas, because you guys are now seeing that even the Minister of International Relations and Trade earlier, back in last month, which was September, August, June, July and June, had been on a 14-region engagement about oil and gas and its potential for the various regions. I still need to understand in terms of why they needed to go to the 14 regions to make it as more as inclusive as possible. Obviously, it's their decision. I'm just quizzing that factor, because obviously it's being dressed up as a national benefit. But here's a core, bare bones, factual presentation. The unfortunate thing is that much of our mining enterprises and extractive industry enterprises are concentrated in two regions that contribute greatly to Namibia's economic prosperity: the Erongo region and the Karas region. The Erongo region sits with a lot of capital, obviously, per square kilometer or per meter or whatever. But a region like the Karas region, and a region like the Ojo-Zonjupa region, which have also a lot of people based in it, they obviously have great development needs based in them. So I'm just leaving you with a last bit of knowledge, with a last bit of factual realization. But before I say my goodbye, we've actually got David, who just stepped in. David, how you doing? David, why are you smiling so big?
What's up? How are you?
I'm alright, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, everything is proper for now.
Proper for now?
Until further notice.
Okay. So it'll be a surprise.
How are things going?
No, it's all good. It's obviously just based upon the oil and gas discussion in Namibia.
Yeah.
But we should not be as fixated on that last 24 hours.
Yeah. No, you know, actually, you know, before you go there, or maybe before we expand if necessary, need to be expanded. They say, one day in politics is equivalent to 1 year. So a lot of things can happen within a day. And, don't be surprised.
No, that's what I'm saying, you know, because yeah. the worst thing that has taken place so far.
Yeah.
In the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
Has been a lot of speculation.
And there's something that, which I did not see coming. I think, you know.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of unpredictability also yeah. in the way things are turning out.
Yeah. So, I don't know if it's a question of, you know, deal with an issue silently and, you know, keep it hush hush.
Yeah.
And then let the whole of the country just speculate.
Yeah.
But now, obviously, here's the worst thing. And I'm just citing also an event that will take place tomorrow in Parliament.
Yeah.
So now the former minister now will show up in Parliament. And the opposition guys will definitely now stand up and as an ad hoc talking point on the agenda, ask, so what happened?
You know, Dwight, what worries me, eh?
Yeah.
What worries me is how do we handle critical areas of our economy? Look, as we are speaking currently, although we are, you know, number one in terms of attracting foreign direct investment, particularly in that area of oil and gas, the institution which is running that, oil and gas on behalf of the government still have an acting MD. Yeah. And you ask the question to say, where is the previous one? I don't want to go there. Then you come to, then you come to the ministry. So why can't we have stability and deal with real issues? And where are we going to spend our time in the next 4 years? And it's really concerning to say, it's a lot of questions. Is it the system? Is it the governance issue? And there is a lot of questions around
the kind of person that we are hiring.
Or is it, are we not aligning with the vision of the country? Honestly, I do not know. Because that was supposed to be a critical area that should not be, you know, tempered with. And we were supposed to move forward before that. But yeah, it's life.
Yeah, it's life.
Yeah. And, you know, we must look what tomorrow has and look forward.
it's definitely tomorrow.
There's always tomorrow. Yeah.
So on that note, guys, let's see each other again. Same time. Stay tuned for the BES after the break. And we'll, obviously, we'll have our discussions again tomorrow.